You're listening to the Youth Creek Podcast on KHC Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNGRayu and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG.
Now,
if you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHC Network.
We pick up their trail like a chopper, run them down, grab those hostages.
And now for the podcast.
What do you mean we?
Deep in the jungle, where nothing that lives is safe.
You lose it here, you're in a world of hurt.
Showtime, kid. Knock, knock.
An elite rescue squad.
You're bleeding, man.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Is being led by the ultimate warrior.
We need the best. That's why you're here.
But now...
What's got Billy so spooked?
There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
They're up against the ultimate enemy.
Holy Mother of God.
Nothing like it has ever been on Earth before.
She says the jungle just came alive and took him.
We cannot see it.
No blood, no bodies. We have nothing.
Hello,
but
everyone.
It sees the heat of our bodies and the heat of our fear. Special.
Whatever it is out there, I killed.
Now that Shane Black's The Predator is coming out, Justin Mayhew and I are going to be looking back at the Predator franchise as a whole, just kind of, and this will just kind of be a quick episode since both Justin and I are very busy.
Stuff to do, people.
But we'll talk about that in at the end of the show, why we're very busy. But for now, Justin, say hi to our listeners.
Howdy ho, folks.
And, yeah, so, Justin, how...
Hello.
So, Justin, where? How did you come to the... What's your relation to the Predator franchise?
Well, I actually saw the film when I was a teenager back in 1987 when it first came out. So, I have a long and storied history with it, I guess you could say. And... Then the alien crossovers that we'll talk about later, you know, the alien versus predator franchise crossovers.
Yes.
So there's that, because aliens, that was my jam. So
Alien is my jam because I love the xenomorph and I talked about this last year when we did the alien retrospective for Covenant. Alien franchise like just has an interesting trajectory. Despite where the Alien versus Predator went, and despite where Ridley Scott took the franchise, because I mean, each movie from 1979 to 1997, regardless of how you felt about all four of those movies, they all had a unique voice, and they all had a unique director behind each one.
Mm-hmm.
So each one, it was essentially the same story. Like all the movies are the same story, but the director brought their own. You need flavor when they repackage the idea. And that was the cool part of it, the Alien franchise. This one, the Predator franchise doesn't quite do that. Like, it doesn't quite have unique filmmakers that took their own and ran with it.
It does have, you know, McTiernan, Die Hard. You know, this is a year before he made Die Hard, so this is... So, you know, Die Hard was like one of his bigger pictures, but this was also a pretty big hit. It was a sleeper, and it took a while, but it took off eventually, too. And then just the very next year, we have
Die Hard.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, right?
Yeah. So to kind of clue in, Predator was a kind of, it started out as a joke in Hollywood because Sylvester Stallone had just done Rocky IV in 85 and had just... Basically fought communism.
Basically all of it on his own.
And ended it.
Single-handedly, yes.
And ended it in a fight between Ivan Drago. So there was this joke of, like, what would Rocky V be? And then I think the joke just kind of spiraled into, well, he's going to have to go to space now to fight aliens. And that's where the idea came from. And Jim and John Thomas, brother duo, they wrote the script and sold it around to a bunch of places. And I don't think... The alien success had anything to do with it because they were already like close to filming by that point, but they sold it before Aliens was a hit. And John Silver, Lawrence Gordon, and Charles Gordon were assigned, and I think John Davis, they were all four, three or four of those producers were all assigned to produce the movie. And that's how, and they went to, and Joel Silver specifically chose John McTiernan because he really liked what he did, what McTiernan did with his first movie, Nomads. Mm. Even though that movie was a critical and box office failure, Silver still loved it and hired him on. And then, of course, he brought on Arnold Schwarzenegger from, you know, Commando, and then he brought on, you know, all these other people to, you know, come work on the movie. And just got an incredible cast. And even, you know, in that same year, like, he was making this, he was also making Lethal Weapon, so he brought on Shane Black to do the rewrites, and play the character, and play, you know, one of the characters in the movie. So, but the production was kind of a hell shoot because they were shooting in the jungle, in South America.
Yeah, Mexico or South America, something like that, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. They were, and on top of that, they...
Yeah, Mexico.
And on top of that, they got different film negatives every day, so that's why when you see... I think they cleaned it up in the 4K, in this new 4K release that they have out right now. But if you've watched like an old 1080p version or some of the more VHS, you can tell like the film stock is kind of different from shot to shot. Mm. Like, or the film negative, like it's different pixelations.
Like different grain qualities and yeah. such. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched the film in a while, so I'll have to check that out. That's an interesting tidbit. I do know that the jungle looked great in the film. The Mexican jungle looked like was a great stand-in for... It's supposed to be Southeast Asia, I think it was, in the
plot. I think so.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, then we have this weird dreadlocked, you know, a Rasta alien.
Yeah.
Coming out your ass. Mm-hmm. Was it? They pitched it like when they finally got around to it. They ditched the Rocky thing and decided to go with let's blend Commando with an alien.
Yeah, I think right? that was a Joel Silver thing because he already knew that he could probably call Arnold Schwarzenegger to do it. So the whole idea of Sylvester doing it, which I think that's what the original idea was.
Right.
I think they were Silver was like no. We'll get Schwarzenegger to do this. Joel Silver just had worked with him and just was like, yeah. And Schwarzenegger was like, hell yeah, sure. I'll bring my own gym just to show my glycerin muscles.
Glycerin. And it's also, I heard tell that it was originally going to be.
So, yeah, I genuinely like the third act of this movie.
The third act where they have the mano a mano fight, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is going, you know, fisticuffs to fisticuffs to this monster, is, you know, the most effective part of the film, you know. And you get to see the monster without his mask on, you know, with the mandibles and the horrible little green eyes and stuff.
Yeah.
And then they start calling each other motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, like, that's where, as we're talking about our thoughts on this movie, I really just, you know, I like the third act of the mono fight. And it also becomes this, you know, metaphorical coliseum of the Predator just, you know, duking it out and just having a blast trying to kill Arnold. And then Arnold trying to fight while he's covered in the mud. And it's insane. It's an insane, insane fight. And it's really just a crazy movie, and there's a lot of looking around, lots of gunpowder, just everyone just getting split off for no reason and then getting shot or brutally, you know, head blown off.
Yep.
But really the most telling scene for me was when they were blowing up that compound of the communist, like the
Sandinistas or whatever they are, yeah. They're jungle Sandinista stand-ins.
There's a really good moment in that movie where Arnold realizes, the fuck, this is like a nothing group. We basically just did this fucking shit for nothing. And he confronts Carl Weathers, because Carl Weathers is the guy that's like, you know, pretty much the organizer of this mission. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? We just did this whole fucking parade and blew up half the fucking earth for the we blew this compound halfway to hell. Now everything is on fire, probably starting a forest fire, and also putting my men at danger. And for what? For, you know, not really. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't nothing, but it was like, you know, but it was like, come on, man, my men are not expendable. Like, I'm not here to just do your dirty work.
But those men are always expendable, otherwise you wouldn't have a body count.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, The Predator, it's a really fun movie, but I like the Alien movies more.
Yeah, there's a divide. There are people who prefer The Predator, and there are people who prefer the Xenomorphs. And especially with Ridley Scott's original film and Aliens 2, you know, Aliens, that was really something that jibed. It was in my wheelhouse. You know what I mean? I like those a lot, right? Mm-hmm.
So, but when did you watch this movie? You said you saw it in theaters, right?
Yeah, so when it was 87 when it came out. So I would have been 16 going on 17 when it came out, and I saw it in, you know, in the first run. The Cinemas West in Gainesville, people, which doesn't exist anymore.
Really?
Yes.
I've been looking for that, like, just the, is it now, like, destroyed?
Yes, it's a parking lot.
All right, you're going to have to tell me more about this, because I actually follow a website that, you know, talks about old movie theaters, and that popped up as, like, one of the ones that were in Gainesville, and I could never find it.
Yeah, I can show you the parking lot that it's at. It's behind the Chevy or GMC lot down on the main highway in Gainesville. Is that Jesse Jewell?
Okay, yeah. I'll look.
It's right off of Jesse Jewell.
Man, all right. Well, yeah. I don't have much more to talk about for Predator. Do you have any more thoughts? I know you didn't get to say much about it.
Oh, I would just say that, you know, the first half, I agree, is a little slower. They do a lot of wandered around aimlessly.
Building up
and shooting banana trees.
Yeah.
They do an awful lot of shooting banana trees in that first part. And then there's the scene. Did we get this where the fella is shaving his head?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, and he's been shaving his head throughout with a disposable razor, and then after the Predator attacks, he's freaked out and he starts gouging his own head with his razor
and it pops
breaks
off.
Yeah, that's an effective, you know, showing that he's, you know, freaking out, man, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not a bad movie if you haven't seen it. I would say watch it. It's a good one.
If you have not seen the first Predator, I would say skip the first minute and a half just as an experiment. Skip the whole spaceship thing. I mean, look, it's a good effect. I don't have a problem with it. It's, but it's kind of one of those things where I'm, you know, curious. And I think the Honest Trailers people brought it up. I kind of wonder as an experiment, like, if you had just seen, like, just skip the first minute and a half, you know, would you still be able to get what was going on? Because while they don't implicitly say it's an alien in the movie, like, but I wonder if you would just piece it together.
Don't they do a similar thing at the beginning of the John Carpenter, The Thing, where they show a spaceship crashing?
Yeah.
Out of space, just kind
of
like, out of
they show and, basically a UFO landing in Antarctica, or heading towards the Earth. But
and, I mean, so it's a similar kind of setup in both then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, if we ever do, I don't know if we ever did The Thing retrospective, but anyway. But if you, but yeah, I just not, always wondered as an experiment if you just cut like the first minute out, if people would actually follow what was going on. Maybe.
I would think so. Yeah, I would think so. People get context better than filmmakers seem to think, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, there are still dumb people.
Oh, sure, there's always dumb people, but they're not all that.
Right.
Know? Did you hear that? I said that you all weren't all dumb.
Yep, and I'm usually the one that's saying people are dumb. Who's the good guy and who's the bad guy now? So, after Predator was a, you know, it was a decent success. It wasn't a massive hit, but it made about six times its budget back.
Right, it was a sleeper. It kind of built and built and built and then kept getting people to come to the theater.
Yeah, and after that movie came out, John McTiernan went straight into Die Hard, and they made Die Hard, and the studio... 20th Century Fox really pushed John McTiernan to either do a Predator or a Die Hard sequel, but McTiernan was leaning more towards doing a Die Hard 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually kind of supervised a couple of the drafts with Steven D'Zuzu. Whoever was the writer of Die Hard, they did a couple drafts of it.
Die Hard the first?
Mm-hmm. And they supervised it, but I think McTiernan just moved on. McTiernan's not the biggest sequel person. As you kind of notice in his filmography, he's only done one. But, so he kind of moved on. And then Predator 2 kind of, you know, Jim and John Thomas were writing for a while. But during this time, there was a comic book based off of the Predator movies, and they kind of did more, you know, work with it. And Jim and John Thomas, the writers of this one in Predator 2, they wanted to kind of, you know, put some of that comic book, put some, you know, references and kind of do an adaptation rather than a sequel. So in the midst of this, they hired a guy who really was a huge comic book nerd, Stephen Hopkins. Who had just recently directed right before Predator 2, Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. So to make it even, the funniest part was to make the Predator even more like urban or socially relevant. They kind of made it more Jamaican looking.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
They put more dreads on it, Vaughn.
Yes. And made it, like, you have even, like, more beads and stuff. It's really silly. Mm. But, Justin, what are your thoughts on Predator 2?
Danny Glover.
That's it?
Danny Glover. Was it Maria Conchita Alonso is pregnant?
Who?
Partner. She's the cop partner.
Oh.
She's pregnant, you remember? And the Predator alien can see that. Isn't that right? He can see her fetus with his... infrared vision or something like that?
Probably.
Look, I've seen the first one more often than I've seen the second one.
I don't remember which one. I know that's not in Predators, so... but anyway, so in Predator 2, they have... they set it in the near-distant future of 1997 in Los Angeles. This is a movie that came out in 1990.
And they're drug cartels, and they get caught up in a drug war and this kind of thing.
Yeah.
The Colombians are there.
So, basically, everyone thought in 1997, like, L.A. would just be covered in drug wars and just, like, everyone just high on cocaine.
Yeah.
And just blowing up shit.
Very similar to that... movie about the head recordings you get where it's supposed to be like 1999 in LA, and this dude sees a head recording of a dude that commits suicide. There's a big corporate scandal in it, but you know, Los Angeles is going nuts for some reason because it always does in
right.
the near future.
Yeah, because everyone thinks LA is just going to go tits up any moment. So now the Predator has landed in LA and he's hunting the city, and he's hunting every cartel, everybody that has a gun, because that's what the Predator does. He hunts, you know, people with weapons. He hunt, you know, because that's, you know, that makes it more fun. That makes it more, you know, enticing, is if he can kill people with guns. And of course, everyone in LA has a gun and weapon because, you know, they don't know when a drug war is about to, you know, spew out, and they have to, you know, shoot to get away. That was a fun, you know, in Predator 2, there's a whole subway scene where, you know, where like a group of like just gangsters, false gangsters, that I would call them.
Mm-hmm.
They just approach a guy that, you know, that has a briefcase, and in his briefcase he has a pistol, and then everyone, old ladies, everybody has a gun, and they're
right.
pointing, and then the Predator just like, just shoots down in terrible, like, chroma keyed out invisibility cloak.
Mm. You know, this also could be like similar in tone to the original RoboCop. kind of stuff.
The, oh, yeah. This
know,
is
everybody's all whacked out and gun-toting and going to shoot each other, you know?
And Danny Glover is like, I'm going to fucking kill everybody in this movie. I don't care who. I'm going to kill.
Except for Maria Conchita Alonso, whose character is pregnant in this film.
Right.
So that's the only thing you can't do.
Wait, how did... So was she pregnant by Bill Paxton's character? Or?
I don't remember. I just remember that the alien scans her and decides not to kill her because she is pregnant. So...
Okay, because I admittedly I was still watching Predator 2 before this podcast, so but I just remember like getting to the subway scene and I'm like, this is fucking funny as hell.
It's quite absurd.
Yes,
the movie is absurd.
Yep, and yeah, so I thought But I mean, I do remember like the ending where all the predators come up after Danny Glover like mm-hmm. slits the throat of another one,
mm-hmm.
and just in the middle of the spaceship, and then all the other predators come up and be like, "Here's your mark, congratulations. Okay. Here's your weapon. Go on. We're gonna go and blow up our ship. We're gonna go kill ourselves now," which seems to be like the popular thing. Like whenever they lose, they have to kill themselves. Like. What's that style in Japan, kamikaze style?
Harakiri.
Harakiri?
Yeah. Seppuku.
Oh, okay.
So harakiri is the old-fashioned, it's called seppuku. You take a knife and you go in there, you cut your guts out, and somebody cuts your head off to make sure you finish.
Right. Yep. So that's what they
Lots
do.
Lots of fun. That's a Friday evening for you right there, people.
And then Danny Glover's just like, whoa. Oh. Like the Keanu Reeves look.
Denny Keanu Reeves Glover.
Yeah. Like, whoa. What the... And that's how Predator 2 ends.
And this is 1990, so this is after Lethal Weapon came out, right?
This was, yeah, right around the time. They had just done Lethal Weapon 2 before filming this.
Right, so, yeah, so the Danny Glover is basically, well, we couldn't get the lead, we couldn't get Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Let's go with the second.
Yeah, and I think Glover is a little miscast, I think, because it's just, he looks tough, he looks like a cop, but he's so, like, he still has that, like, good-looking smile. Like, yep. He doesn't have that look of, I have been fucking fighting a drug war for 7 years, motherfucker. Yeah.
He's much more of an affable fellow than, you know, the crazy drug lord fighting, you know, crazy mm-hmm. pants, right?
Yeah.
He looks like a dad. I mean, come on. Danny Glover looks like a dad, okay?
He looks like a cop dad. Dad yes. cop.
Who wears the dad pants?
Yeah.
The question is, are the dad pants different than the mom pants?
Who knows? Yeah. but yeah, so Predator 2, it's an interesting movie. I think it's a little bit more colorful than the last one because they have the streets of LA.
Yes, it's chaotic too in a lot of ways.
I mean, there's a scene where a guy is being, you know, hung tin and like this whole Jamaican mob group. I'm sorry. They're all getting killed in front of him, and then he's dead too because he got stabbed in the heart.
And the Colombians, because I mean, come on, you know, those are the people who do drugs. Obviously, those Jamaicans and Colombians. You know, no stereotyping here whatsoever, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole scene where Danny Glover goes in a car with like a weed pot smoking Jamaicans. They're like, "Hey, we need you to come and meet the Jamaican King Willie, whatever."
Yeah. Oh boy.
Joel, God.
So yeah, it's a different movie than the, you know, Predator versus Predator 2.
Yeah.
Different.
Mm-hmm. Very different. You couldn't get any different, and it's fine.
I'd say that Predator, the first one, is a much more evenly and constructed film.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But I'm just saying, like, this is watchable. It's not unwatchable.
Well, especially watchable if you go in, you know, with your tongue planted firmly in your cheek, ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, let it just be what it is. It's not a serious film, I would say.
It's a very silly movie.
Yes. And then
And then for 14 years, the franchise stalled out.
Nothing.
There was a... Robert Rodriguez did write a draft for a Predator 2.
Right.
Not 3. He wrote... Because they were supposed to do... Because I think Robert Rodriguez or the studio, somebody at that time was like, you know, let's just kind of forget the second one.
Right. We'll do a reboot. Like sort of like a soft reboot kind of a thing.
Yeah. And Robert Rodriguez came in and was like, I had this idea of like doing, you know, a planet jungle where the predators like, you know, where the predators like fight their game, like it's a game reserve for them, and the humans are shipped there.
Yeah, go fully on with the most dangerous game.
Right. But the thing was, there was supposed to be like more creature designs, more like it was supposed to be kind of like Avatar in terms of the amount of creatures.
You know, the Robert Rodriguez writes a draft about them abducting people to take to their home world, or their reserve world, as it were. Does that sound familiar at all?
Yeah.
Which we're skipping ahead on that, so
yeah.
We'll get
well,
to that.
We're kind of going through the timeline here.
Right, so and then, first it's Aliens versus Predators we finally do get after, you know, 2003, 2004, or something like that?
Yes, 2004, and the development was actually interesting because after Matchstick Men, Ridley Scott was planning on doing an Alien 5 written by James Cameron. So, but while they were kind of developing it, while, you know, and they were like in hard prep, like there were scripts written, all that good stuff. But then around the same time, Freddy vs. Jason came out in 2003, Tom Rothman was like, why don't we do an Alien vs. Predator? We got all the rights. We got everyone together. Like, what are we sitting on this pile of money for? So they booted James Cameron, Ridley Scott's Alien 5, and called Paul Thomas Anderson. Paul W.S. Anderson of Resident Evil fame.
Yes, not my favorite Andersons of the Anderson lot.
And they said, you know, hey, you know, can you come work on this movie, you know, Alien vs. Predator? And for Anderson, it was like a dream project because he loved both franchises. So he's like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And he jumped on board. He did it for $60 million. And they rushed it out very quickly. I think they only spent like 2 months shooting and then 4 months editing the movie. So it was a very quick production, all in sound stages, very little location shooting.
Yeah, it was Antarctica basically at night, so they shoot it on a sound stage.
Yep, just have fake snow everywhere.
And Lance Henriksen. Is this the one where he gets his ear lopped off, or is that in Aliens?
That might be Alien 3. I think that's Alien 3.
Okay.
I remember him getting like hit in the pipe close to the ear, and he's like bleeding.
Yeah, there's like ears hanging off.
Yeah.
That's in the actual Alien, the Fincher.
I think that is Alien 3.
Yeah, Fincher's Alien, right?
Right. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think that did happen in Alien 3.
Okay. But we have Lance Henriksen again. And this time he's playing Weyland Yutani, the starter of the most evil corporation in the world, which is only slightly worse than Amazon or
Walmart.
Yes.
So we have Weyland. He's like, you know, fuck it. I want to go and explore this, you know, hidden period in Antarctica. So it's very much like The Thing already.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. This movie is basically a ripoff of The Thing.
That's true. I had thought about that. I was mainly thinking about the goofiness of the whole thing, the whole endeavor.
And you just have, like, your basically murderous row of caricatures.
Yep.
Except for the female character, who I found very interesting.
And she winds up being the survivor girl, like the horror movie survivor girl thing.
I'm having to look it up. And that was really the only thing I really liked about Alien vs. Predator, is that...
It's Sanaa Lathan who actually played the survivor girl in this. Sanaa Lathan.
All right. Well, I liked her character. Like, that was the most... Because she actually was like, you know, I'm going to take care of her. I'm going to try my best. No one really listened to her. Like, she's kind of like a Ripley.
Like a Cassandra character, you know. You know, and nobody will listen. And she was the only one that really had any kind of attempt at character development, as far as I could tell,
right.
Really.
I mean, there's still some dumb shit. Like, she's like that character's climbing up, you know, Everest or something. And when she gets to the top, she sees like a helicopter there waiting for her.
A helicopter at the top
that she didn't hear or see.
Yep. And a helicopter climbing up Mount Everest is going to be a real feat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, whatever. Well,
my favorite of all is when they're getting ready to blow up the base and they're getting rid of the xenomorphs, and her and the predator are running hand in hand. Like, you know, skipping across the snow.
Oh, I thought that was cool.
I thought it was hilarious. I just about fell out of my chair laughing when I saw that.
That whole, like, third act of that character teaming up with the Predator, I thought was, like, just, fuck yeah, that's awesome. Because that's actually what I would want to see, like, Helen Ripley do anyway. Like, her taking her own trauma and anger and just being like, fuck, Predator, we got to do this. We got to fucking kill this queen alien.
Right.
Are you with me or not?
Oh, I can dig the idea of, you know, uneasy alliances, but the visual, that visual is just, burned itself into my head, you know?
And the fact that they're, like, you know, climbing, holding on to this, like, thing while being pulled up.
Everything exploding and...
And then when they get up, they have to, like, run, you know, like, they have to run because the whole thing is collapsing.
Yep. The whole Antarctic shelf is going into the ocean.
And somehow the queen alien survives all of that.
They always do, don't they? They always do. The queen alien always survives.
That slimy bitch.
Are you channeling your inner Ripley now?
Yeah, get away from her, you bitch. But I loved it. But yeah, and that's really the only thing I like about Alien versus Predator is...
Sadly, I didn't see the second.
Me neither. I tried to.
Requiem is what they called it. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
And I saw the Predator franchise. I saw the Predator movies before I saw the Alien movies. So I was actually kind of excited for AVPR because back when, I don't know if you remember this movie, this channel on TV, there was a channel called Reels Channel.
Yes.
That, you know, about 10 years ago, they were all about, like, movie coverage and all that. So a year before Alien vs. Predator Requiem came out, they did a whole set visit with the directors and whatnot, and they were, you know, shooting Alien vs. Predator Requiem, and they were talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, motherfucker, this actually could be good. This could actually be fun. You know, they're talking about it being hard R, and then after that, nothing for months. Until, like, September, October, when we finally got, like, the one trailer for the movie. And then it just kind of came and went. And then I read some message boards that talked about the movie. I don't care about... I tried to watch Alien vs. Predator Requiem before the show. I just couldn't get the access to it in time.
Yeah. And I was just too busy this morning. I was writing papers and things, so sorry, folks. I didn't do my research for this episode like I should.
However, I've heard like some good things over the time.
I would be surprised if I liked it.
I would be too.
I would be surprised if I liked it.
Because I've heard some of the really bad things that have happened in the movie, and I don't really care to see it. But then I've heard, basically, I was listening to the Waffle Press. Hey, Diego.
Do they have any waffles? Let's have some waffles.
I want
some waffles.
I think they do. They do have lots of waffles.
I want waffles. I want some waffles with lots of whipped cream and maple syrup and nuts.
Strawberries! All right. And so Diego was talking with Matt Green.
Hey, where's bacon at?
I think Diego was talking with Matt Gringo, and Matt Gringo actually surprisingly liked the film.
Requiem?
Yeah, Requiem. Hmm. And kind of made, you know, and kind of described, it's kind of an allegory, a very loose allegory to the Iraq War.
Well, that's interesting. I might have to see that, because I was dubious, I'll tell you. I was very dubious.
Well, I think everyone was, because I think everyone felt cheated after AVP. Because they wanted a hard R. They wanted an R-rated, you know, rock'em sock'em alien doing battle with a predator. And they got this PG-13 movie where the one chestburster scene we get is, you know, a girl wearing a red sweater. And it just looks like, you know, the sweater is, like, just leaking as the thing's bursting out. So... Oh, well.
And, you know, I mean, the PG-13, I have issues, you know. Sometime we could do a discussion about the PG-13 rating.
Maybe one day. I'll save that for the podcast because I have my own thoughts.
I do have opinions.
But both movies were actually, well, I think the I think AVPR was a bomb. Because it did come and went, but it still was cost very little.
Yeah.
After that, the Predator franchise kind of stalled, but not too long.
No, I mean, we're talking just a matter of a couple of years, really, you know, before they started reviving it. It was 2009 they started developing again on Rodriguez's script, which we came back to.
Rodriguez. So after AVPR, Rodriguez came in with like a newer pitch that was like, you know, like kind of a lesser version of his script.
Yep.
And
they had hired some people to revamp it.
They hired kind of a B movie director, Nimrod Antel, to direct it. And they were like, and the studio was like, okay, we can do this for, you know, Predator movie for $40 million. And, you know, we'll do, and it would be kind of, it was supposed to be like the start of a new Predator trilogy. Because they were going to do, because they wanted to expand more in the sequels, more of the game reserve and more of the Predator planet and basically the planet Predator civilization, so to speak. So that's what they were going to do with the with Robert Rodriguez's Predator thing. However, it just, you know, however, it kind of, that movie also, much like AVP, it kind of just came and went because, again, they didn't market the movie very well, and it just didn't do well. And but the shocking part was the movie still made money. Like, the movie made $50 million domestic, and I think it made, like, over 100 or close to $150 million worldwide. What are your thoughts on Predators?
I think it's an improvement over the AVPs.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot happens. It seems to be more back to the original 1987 Predator, stripped down, straightforward, you know, people versus monster, you know, people shoot at monster, people get killed by monster, people shoot at monster again, rinse, repeat, you know.
Yeah. And look, the idea of Predators
Adrian Brody.
The idea of Predators having their own little game reserve and just, you know, going nutso on their own planet.
I bought it.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea for a story, and to have like all of these, like, basically just a bunch of like villains or, you know, just really bad people just fight it out. And you have to kind of, you know, figure, and you have to kind of grow with them. You're forced to kind of grow and be with them. Like, these are all great ideas. I think the issue with Predators is that, like you said, it's the same shit as the first movie. And after a while, you're just like, so what?
Yeah, I mean, it seems a little overlong, you know, for what they had. That there weren't a lot of complications to the plot, you know. Just basically, it's Adrian Brody and a group of ragtag dudes who don't always trust each other, shooting at predators, right?
Yeah.
And getting picked off in the night.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of, you know, there's not a, like, lost, you know, reveal there's a pyramid on the planet or there's a hatch in the ground or, you know, there's another third set of aliens on the planet or anything like that to put another monkey wrench into the plot. Nothing really escalates, you know, over the top, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, I think Adrian Brody was miscast.
Adrian Brody is always miscast.
I mean, and look, I know, like, he is a great actor, I promise.
He is?
Like, I mean, he's a really good, like, he's trying hard. He's kind of like a, I don't know, I kind of think of him as, like, you know, like a less annoying Jared Leto. And that he's kind of a character actor. He tries, you know, his hardest. But maybe he just tries a little too hard.
There's actually a spectrum here of the annoying character actor, with, you know, the James Franco, the Jared Leto, the Adrian Brody and the Shia LaBeouf all on this spectrum of annoying character actors.
Yeah, and they're just all eccentric and whatnot. And look, Adrian Brody has given really good performances, but I just feel like casting him as like the macho, serious, like I've killed multiple people kind of dude, I just didn't buy it.
I think he comes the closest when he does his indie dramas. Like, have you ever seen The Summer of Sam? Spike Lee. It's an uneven movie. There's a lot of problems with it. But Adrian Brody is one of the main characters in The Summer of Sam.
Okay.
And it's an interesting take on the subject matter. I think that Spike Lee was going to interesting places, but I think more he could have done a little bit more development on it. But it's an interesting film. I do recommend that you give it a shot and see you know, certain development in Adrian Brody's and Spike Lee's careers, you know.
Okay, I'll check it out. But, yeah, I mean, I like Adrian Brody as an actor. It was just, this is just, like, he's trying really hard to be Christian Bale. And you're just like, no, you're not Christian Bale. You're Adrian Brody that's, like, kind of lean and muscle, but not really. You're just, like, have you ever seen the skit on Key and Peele where, like, Peele plays an actor who's, like, trying to be the tough guy, and he's trying to convince, like, Key and Colin Hanks on the set, like, that he's a real actor, like, he's a real compelling mobster, and everyone's just like, I'm not buying it.
No, I don't think I saw that skit. I didn't see that one, so I might have to check that out now.
There's a whole skit where, like, Colin Hanks is just getting beat the shit out of by Jordan Peele. And Colin, I just don't believe it. And that's how I feel about Adrian Brody in this movie. Like, Adrian Brody would have to send me to the, like, Adrian Brody could send me to the fucking hospital, and I still wouldn't believe he could take my ass.
It kind of reminds me of Futurama. Leela's fighting mentor when she was a kid was named Thnog.
Mm-hmm.
And Thnog said, it doesn't matter how many times you hit, kick my ass or break my bones, I will always win because I'm a boy, you're a girl. Girls don't have the fighting spirit. And so Adrian Brody doesn't have the fighting spirit.
Yeah, he doesn't. And then the movie ends in a very, like, sequel setup way.
Yep.
And then nothing goes on with it.
Well, until now. Now we get Black and Decker.
Yep. So,
which I haven't seen yet, I guess.
Well, it's opening tonight. Yep. I'll try to put this podcast before Thursday night. Or tonight.
No, tonight.
Yeah, I'll try and get it up there. But for now, we have not seen it. I'm going to try and see it tonight. And we'll maybe have a podcast over, like, in the weekend or, you know, next week. But, yeah. So what do you hope for the Black & Decker joint?
Well, I read a review, or a preview, I should say, that claimed that it was trying to go back to the 80s big blockbuster kind of feel.
Uh-huh.
And it had better do it and do it right, man. Otherwise, I would be angry.
Well, the problem with doing an 80s style nowadays is, do you do it with the blood spurts? Do you do it like the reason why the 80s was kind of such a big deal was it was visceral in their violence.
Right.
I mean, when you have, like, Tom Savini, who is just basically working out, like, all the shit he saw during the Vietnam War and applying it to, like, his makeup effects.
Yeah, from starting with early things like
Friday the
13th, yes. And then moving on. And all the big R-rated action movies of the 80s. We mentioned, you know, Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, you know.
And the problem nowadays is, we can just do CG blood, CG guts, CG.
And I do have a problem. I really do prefer the practical blood. You know, that it seems more gooey, more weighty. You know, there's more gravity to the, you know, physical onset, practical sets of blood, you know.
Yeah. And that's why I just am not, you know, and that's why I'm kind of like, and I've already seen, like, the Red Band trailer, and there's already CGI blood spurts, and I'm like,
uh-oh.
Yes.
Yes. I really, really prefer practical effects of blood. You know why? If you do an old-fashioned Tom Savini rig, which is a chunk of polystyrene tube from the hardware store and some corn syrup, you're talking, you know, pennies for each blood spurt.
Yeah.
You know, you could charge, you know, you could get like just a big old bag of corn syrup, you know, a little chocolate, a little paint, put that together, and that's going to run you like a nickel a day for, you know, gallons of blood, you know? Yep. So this whole thing, having a nerd sit there and charging, you know, thousands of dollars an hour to put fake blood in, is just stupid.
It's laziness to me.
It's very lazy. Very lazy.
But then again, I mean, you know, I understand filmmaking is tough. You and I both understand filmmaking is tough, but still, it's... When you do it as much in camera as possible, it shows.
Yes.
And if you do it right, you shoot it right with the right lighting, right angle, right. You can make it look good.
And I have nothing against using computer-generated imagery for, you know, certain very over-the-top things. But a blood spurt is something you could do pretty easily.
Yeah.
On set, all the time, quite quickly and effectively.
Yeah. I feel like the reason why they just do it nowadays is because they're still not sure in the editing room if they want to do a PG-13 or an R. Because you can... Because if you do a blood spurt, you now run the risk of, oh, we're going to get an R or NC-17.
Right. Yep.
So I feel like they're just doing it because it'll just be easier in post to be like chroma key it out or...
Yeah, well, you know, it's you know, there's no point to go for a PG-13.
Hopefully. I mean, The Nun last weekend was an R-rated movie and it made like $50 million, so...
I'm just bored of PG-13. You know, they don't scare me. You know, that it has to be a lot more intense than a PG-13. And also, there's also the thing where you get the PG-13 movie and you go in, and there's an awful lot of gore and blood and, you know, even nudity. And you're going, how did this not become an R? You know, there's something going on with the PG-13 category that is starting to bleed over, that what I once would have considered R rating is now also being a PG-13 in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think The Matrix, I mean, if you tone down the language of The Matrix, you could have made it PG-13.
Yes, easy. Especially nowadays. If you take, you know, the PG-13 movies that you see nowadays, horror movies, they're right. I mean, they're on the thin razor's edge of being an R. I mean, I would have called those an R-rated movie 15 or 20 years ago. Well, yeah. I guess that we'll let this go at this and... Stand then?
Yeah, let's wrap up real quickly.
Yep.
So, I like Predator. So, yeah, I like the Predator franchise. It's fine. We'll have more on the Predator next week. Justin, where can the good people find you?
At the Cardboard Rocket and at the GoFundMe page for Bear Gator.
Yep. So, folks, we are hard at work raising money for the Bear Gator proof of concept film. We're doing this for Justin's capstone, but also we're doing this so we can have something to show that of the movie. So when we make this a feature film, we can make this happen. So please, I'll have a link in the description below. Please, if you can, donate. But if you can't, please share the GoFundMe. Spread it around to everyone you know. Email, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Share it. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you next week, or we'll be back with you soon on the retrospectives for the Halloween stuff. All right, I will see you all.
And now it wants us.
It kills for pleasure.
He was skinned alive!
It hunts for sport.
He's killing us one at a time.
We're all gonna die.
But this time, it's picked the wrong man to hunt.
If it bleeds, you can kill it.
Century Fox presents Arnold Schwarzenegger. Predator. The hunt begins Friday, June 12th at theaters everywhere.